feel like a lot of times people don't go deeper in the course because they simply think they don't understand what it's saying. You know, and rather than say, well, I don't know what the heck that just said, they silently become disoriented and confused and then just drop it. So, you know, just it's okay not to know, even though we're adults. And it's like the cardinal sin for adults to admit that they don't know. I think we're smart enough to go, okay, it's all right, I don't know. Okay, so we can, because it says that simplicity is very difficult for twisted minds in the course. And that's a hilarious statement to me. It's like nothing's harder for us than simplicity, because the ego part of the mind is the part that complicates everything up so that you can hide the true simplicity of everything. You know, so it took me a while to get that the course just meant what it said, that I kept trying to go for something deeper, and I realized that it just means what it says. You know, like nothing real can be threatened. Like somebody said, what does that mean? Well, it means nothing real can be threatened. It means if it's real, it can't be threatened. It can't be destroyed. It doesn't end. It's always going to be there. And since we live in a world where things seem to be temporary, then it seems like, what does that mean? I don't understand that. Because my idea of what's real, everything that's real in my life, it can change. It can alter. And so the course is advocating an entirely different thought system. So what makes the course easier to understand is to really try to get that it is not based on what we were taught. So when we try to fit it into the old thought system that we grew up in, it won't make sense. You know, so just let go of thinking that it has to make sense based on what we've already learned. You know what I mean? It's like trying to learn another language. It's different. It's a whole different set of meanings to learn the meanings of words in French than it is in English. And so that's what the course is like. It's like another language. So it's not trying to talk English. It's talking course. And when you listen to it from that perspective, it makes a lot more sense. So from a course perspective, nothing real can be threatened. And if it's unreal, it doesn't exist. And herein lies the peace of God. So basically it's saying if we're going to have the peace that the course is promising, we need to understand that you don't have that kind of peace until you are dealing with what cannot be threatened, what you cannot lose, what you can always depend on, what is real. And if it's real, it can be threatened. So the first paragraph, we'll go through that, and then we'll go through each one of them, and we'll try to hit the main points. It says, this is how A Course in Miracles begins. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. It says, herein lies the peace of God. The Course makes a fundamental difference between the real and the unreal. And when you're reading it and you see a semicolon, then it's just going to restate what it just said in another way, which is it makes a fundamental distinction between knowledge and perception. And knowledge is truth. Under one law, the law of love or God. So we know that God and love from a course perspective is the same thing. Truth is, and then it goes on, so it explains everything. It says truth is unalterable, eternal, and unambiguous. Okay, so if from a course perspective, if it's true, it's unalterable. If it's true, it's eternal. If it's true, it's unambiguous. And truth can be unrecognized, but truth cannot be changed. So you might not recognize the truth, but you can't change the truth. So he says the truth applies to everything that the Creator created. And only what the Creator created is real. That's, to me, that's one of the most powerful statements in the book after studying this for almost 30 years. It's like amazing to me how I have to get that whatever created us and whatever created what's real and that what's real lasts, then it's only what God created that's really real. The error that we make is we think that what we make separate from God is real. So when the Course says it's not real, we get offended because we're thinking of what we perceive and what we made. So let's say I make up a relationship. All right, and I want to believe it's real. And then the Course says, well, if it's real, it can't change. If it's real, it can't be threatened. Yet you're scared half to death in the relationship. You don't know if it's real. You don't know if the person loves you. You don't know what's going to happen. You're feeling, okay, from a Course perspective, that's not a real relationship. But then we go, well, it is real, you know, because I feel it. And I feel it in my heart, so it must be real. No, based on this, if it's real, you're not full of fear about it. If it's real, you don't feel threatened. And so that's what I kind of think drives my ego crazy about the course, because I can't pretend that I don't know what I know based on it. It's like, if it says nothing real can be threatened and I'm in a relationship that I feel threatened in, then I have to either go, either it's wrong or what I'm dealing with is not real. The ego mind's going to go, it's wrong. It's going to say, I'm right, the truth is wrong, or that's not the truth. That's usually the way the ego does it, because it'd rather be right than be happy. So even though I'm miserable, I still want to be right about this being real. And the Course is saying, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And that's the question that we have to ask ourselves all the time. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Because it says in most cases, in order to be happy, you're going to have to be wrong, because the way you figured it out isn't the way that it really is. So you have to be willing to give up your position in order to have the healing that you're looking for. You know, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like if you've decided it's one way, but it's really another way. You know, if I've lost my car keys and they're upstairs, but I've decided they have to be in the kitchen, and I don't care how much anybody tells me it's upstairs, I want it to be in the kitchen. Well, then I'm going to be wrong. I'm never going to find the keys, but I want to be right so bad that I'm not going to pay attention to the person saying it's upstairs, because I want to be right, even though I'm wrong. See what I mean? So the Course is saying, well, then in order for you to be happy and be able to drive your little booty home, you're going to have to say, I'm wrong about it being in the kitchen and I need to go upstairs to get my keys. Then you can go home. Then you have access to your car. But you had to be wrong to get access to your car. So that's the same thing in a way that it's trying to get us to see on the truth level. If you're unhappy, if you're full of fear and anxiety and you don't really feel good about your life and what's going on in it, then you want to be wrong about the way you've got it figured out. You want to be wrong about the way that it is. And it's saying, like, if you're not happy, it's simply because you're not looking for your happiness where it's located. You may have decided it's in this person, place, or thing, but it's actually not in that person, place, or thing. So that's just like looking for the keys in the kitchen when it's upstairs. You've decided it's in this person that you want it to be in. You've decided it's in this job that you want it to be in. See what I'm saying? It's just like we make up our plan for happiness, and then we try to fit everything and everybody into our plan. And he says that's the error that we make. And then we hold grievances because people are not cooperating with our plan. Okay, I sign rolls to all of you. You're not fulfilling it. I'm mad at you now. Now I need therapy because you are not acting out my script. So now I got to get therapy. Okay, so let's make a distinction right now that whatever our Creator created is real. That the truth, and here's another interesting statement. He says the truth is beyond learning. That's deep, isn't it? You can't learn the truth. And in the book, he also says, I can't describe what love is. I can tell you what love isn't. So love is beyond description, right? So he says, I tell you what it isn't. And he says, by you knowing what it isn't, that's how you'll get an idea of what it is. So it isn't fear. It isn't jealousy. It isn't depression. It isn't limitation. It isn't possession. It isn't attack. It's none of those. It's not lack. It's not sickness. Love is not loneliness. It's not separateness. And then that freaks my ego out too, because I know I love you. That's why I'm jealous. I know I love you. That's why I'm so afraid of you being with somebody else. No, the Course says, that's not love. That's fear. Why? How do you know that? Well, you're afraid. So it's like I said, the simplicity is what freaks us out, because we want to make it deeper than that. Are you scared half to death when you walk out of the door? That's love. That's not love, that's fear. The ego said that's love. See, my ego said that's love. See, I almost couldn't control it. It's so much a part of our programming that I just said it automatically, because it looks like sometimes the people I love the most are the ones I've gone through the most pain with. So it looks like, well, I know I must love you because I go through so much stuff with you. You know, I'm going through so much stuff with you because I have such fear around you. That's why I'm going through so much stuff with you. But some forms of fear I like, so I call it love. The Course says that we have some forms of fear that we like, and we'll call it love, you know. Usually in love means in fear. Right now we're really cool. Now I'm about to get into fear with you. Let's make love. Well, you, of course, say you can't make anything. It's real. You can only extend what's real because it's already been created. So all you can do is become a channel for it to continue to extend. You can't make it. So that's why the whole statement, make love, is an illusion too. Because it certainly ends, and for a lot of people, much too fast. So it's easy to tell the difference between fear and love, but the Course says since we do fear easier than we do love, okay, then he says what we do is we just make up a version of love that a fearful mind can do. I'll say that again. Since we don't know how to love unconditionally, love equally, give everybody freedom, don't put a lot of scripts on, he says, well, what we did, we just abandoned the whole idea of real, and then we just came up with our own version of love. And he says, our version of love is a bargain. And our version of love is made up on, he says, he calls them bargains made with guilt. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to make you feel guilty if you don't do this, and I make myself feel guilty if I don't do this, and I'm going to, and if you do this, I'll do this, and if you don't do this, then I'm not going to do that. The Course says that's a bargain. That what we call love is a bargain, because we give it depending on what the person does, and then we withdraw it based on what they don't do or what they do. And he says that's what you do in a bargain. I'll give you this if you give me that. All right, I'll be here for you forever if you don't go out to lunch with another woman. It's a bargain. And so what people don't do is just admit it's a bargain and then go ahead and bargain with somebody who want to make the same bargain you want to make. But the ego won't let you do that, though. The ego is going to make you seek out a person that wants to do just the opposite of what it is your bargain is. Because if you don't love yourself, you're not going to choose somebody that's going to be peaceful for you. And so the Course said, if you're full of fear and guilt, you're not going to choose someone who is of the same nature you are when it comes to relationship. Let's say you need certain agreements. Nothing's wrong with that. If we're learning to evolve to a higher level of love, then we have to, first and foremost, not make ourselves more afraid. So it's important to make your agreements that you feel like you need to make, and then keep those agreements as long as you feel like you need to, and then renegotiate. As you begin to lose your fear, you can renegotiate your agreements. But in the beginning, it's important not to pretend that you're where you're not, because it's going to bite you on the butt in the back end, which happens a lot with truth students. They'll go, all right, I'm ready to go out here and live this. I'm going to try to give you freedom. But in the truth, they have not evolved to the point that they can really give a person freedom, but they think they ought to because they're reading it. And then they hook up, and then they make a false promise that they can't keep. And then they end up having a grievance against the person, because they couldn't keep the agreement that they thought they could. They really are afraid. They really are insecure. They really do need to have a lot of boundaries. They really do need these things, but they said they didn't, or they wanted to go beyond it. I'm ready to grow, so I'm ready to go beyond that, you know? And then they really not, because the Course says readiness isn't mastery. So just because I say I'm ready, it doesn't mean I'm able to do it right now, but we beat ourselves up because we're not able to do what we say we're ready to learn to do. So if I should love all of you equally, yet I'm not at the level of consciousness that I can do that, then I beat myself up because he just said I should love everybody. And so I can't do that, so I beat myself up. But that's crazy. If I already knew how to do it, I wouldn't be studying, I wouldn't be reading, I wouldn't be in a curriculum. So to beat myself up because I can't already do what I'm trying to learn to do doesn't make any sense. So that took a lot of guilt away from me. I went, oh, okay, I don't know how to love unconditionally. I don't know how to do all of this yet. I am learning. I am willing to learn. So I'm not going to beat myself up because I can't do it yet. I just admit to myself that I can't do it yet. But I've set the goal to do it. And then you don't present yourself to somebody like you can do it. Right? You don't tell them, I'm going to love you no matter what. I'm never going to get upset no matter what. I'm going to always be here for you no matter what. I want to be here for you no matter what. I really want to give you peace no matter what. I really want to connect with you no matter what. You can tell them that. But to say, I'm never going to get upset. I know how I'm going to be every day. I'm going to be the same for you no matter what you do. You know, it's like, you know that. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. They don't take into consideration hormones, you know. So that's a good point. So the Course says that truth has no opposite, no beginning, and no end. It merely is. So what the first paragraph did was it established what truth is. So let's hear that again. It's The purpose of the course is to teach us how to tell the difference between what's real as God created it and what's not real as love created it. That's the only purpose of the course. It's not for manifesting things. It's not for creating your soulmate. It's not for healing a disease. It's not for getting a better career. It's not about making more money, even though all of those things seem to be the side effect of learning how to live and practice the truth. Okay, the Course calls it the echo of the voice for God. But he says you don't go looking for the echo, which is what most people are doing. I'm broke, let me find God. God will give me the money, I can pay my bill. I wish I had a mate. I'll get into God. God will give me the mate. Then I can finally have a date next Saturday night. In most cases, we tend to get on our spiritual path because there's something in our physical world that we like to see changed. It very seldom is coming from, I just want to know God. I want to wake up to my spiritual identity. That usually comes after the other reasons. And then somewhere along the line, you begin to get, oh, okay, it's really about me waking up to my true self. But very rarely is that the reason why anybody gets into this stuff. They're usually unhappy about something and they want to see it change. So it's really about healing something more so than usually about making a connection with Source. That usually comes later. Does everybody relate to what I'm saying? I've done this a long time. Very seldom do people get into this kind of stuff unless at first there's usually a crisis, there's usually a situation they're unhappy about, and they want to see that situation change. That's why all the manifestation classes and The Secret and all this stuff is so popular right now. It has nothing to do with spiritual evolvement. It just has to do with I want some stuff. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay, and since it's not about guilt or grievances or sin, I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. But I remember that when I was a child and I had toys, I can't remember my mother ever saying to me, "You got to stop playing with this toy today." I noticed that I just lost interest in the toy. Before I knew it, I was just not interested in the toy anymore. I think almost if my mother had tried to force the little, cowboys were big when I was a kid, tried to take the little gun away from me, I'd probably have been traumatized. But it's just what happened one day was I thought I was interested in guns, and all of a sudden I noticed girls. And then after that, I wanted a gun again. Where's that gun? I need that gun. I'm gonna revert it back, but same thing with dolls. I bet you just one day you weren't into dolls. Okay, the course then step it up. All of our obsession with material things is the exact same thing as a child being obsessed with their toys. It's exactly the same thing. So it's okay for us to have our material toys as long as we realize they're toys. And you don't force people to give up their desire for material physical toys. As they spiritually evolve, they'll just naturally realize that's not the most important thing. So it's okay to want your car and the house and whatever it is. It doesn't make any difference. You should feel no more guilt about that than you did in getting your doll when you were a kid. So what people find out when they manifest things is that generally speaking, they still aren't happy. Because they still haven't dealt with their issues, right? And what are the issues? A sense of separation from God, not loving yourself completely, not knowing how innocent and beautiful and divine you are. That issue hasn't been dealt with. And if that issue hasn't been dealt with, you'll still be miserable. You just do it in a more luxurious surrounding. You do it in a fancier car. You do it in prettier clothes. That's something I've heard Oprah say many times. On her show, she said one of the funniest things that she's noticed over and over again is people think that money is going to solve all of their problems and make them happy. It's great, it's wonderful, I love the things that it can provide and you can deal. But if you think that because you have money, you still are not going to be dealing with your fears or your anxieties or your insecurities or whatever else that you haven't worked on internally, she says you're fooling yourself. And every wealthy person I've ever known personally has also said the same thing. Now, I would like to have my guilt in Fiji. As opposed to Colorado Boulevard, where I now reside, but so cool. You know what I mean? That's cool. So I can get to that. So the course is telling us that the truth then has nothing to do with any of that stuff because it changes. All right. So then in the next paragraph, then it tells us the world of perception. So there's truth, and then there's the world of perception. All right, before I go to the world of perception, any questions about, we covered truth in one paragraph. You know this is the band's class, don't you? Everybody clear about what the truth is? It's something that what?
Doesn't change.
It doesn't change. It's always there. You can always depend on it. It applies to everybody equally. That was one of the reasons why I got into metaphysics in the first place. Growing up as an African American in the South in my 20s, when I first got into this, I went, there's got to be rules and there's got to be laws that have nothing to do with your race or your sex that I can depend on. Because appearing to be a minority, it looked like I was at the mercy of other people who had more power than me. So it was like, okay, it looked like it was about me being liked. And so it was funny how the racism that I experienced in the South as a child propelled me on my spiritual path, which shows that no matter what you're going through or however you grew up, the purpose of it was to push you on your spiritual path. That was the ultimate purpose of whatever condition I was born into. And then when you begin to wake up, you realize that you're not a victim of anybody. So it actually erases your own racism yourself, because then there's nobody to blame. You know what I'm saying? At the point that I started to wake up, I realized that I wasn't a victim of being a minority. You see? You know? So actually, enlightenment helped me let go of what was limiting me. So if I still had the racial prejudice I had been taught as a child, which was that all of my woes were coming from white people, basically, which was kind of freaky though. On the one hand, you were told you were being oppressed by white people, and then on the other hand, you was in a black Southern Baptist church looking at a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus that you were supposed to pray to, and you wonder why you're so screwed up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's really deep when you think about it, you know. And I was the kind of kid that questioned everything, so I was constantly told, you don't question, and adults were getting upset with me. You don't question the Bible. You don't question, what you talking about, you know. So if you would realize the insane lessons that we've learned, it's a wonder any of us have any sense whatsoever. We ought to be so proud of ourselves. We really should be. We learned some insane stuff. And just a lot of people still believe it to the bottom of their heart. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And you got relatives that are like that, and you got friends that are like that. That you know they got prejudice, they got fear, they have misperceptions about everything. You still love them, don't you? You see what I'm saying? So because you realize they're on their path, they'll wake up sooner or later, because a consciousness like that creates such a challenging life that at some point you go, there must be a better way. See, that a person with that kind of consciousness, it helps me as far as wanting to get back at people, because I realized just being them is punishment enough. Really, that's what I go sometimes. I go, you know, just having that kind of mind, your day is such hell that there really is no need for me to do anything, because you're going to do it to yourself much better, because you know, the person that's prejudiced is going to meet somebody that's prejudiced. You know what I'm saying? The person that's mean is going to meet somebody. You know what I'm saying? It's like they're setting it up that they're going to be surrounded by their own consciousness. And sure, it's going to make them believe it's really true, but on the other hand, it's going to push them closer to that day that they go, there must be a better way. And that's why sometimes you leave people alone and you let them have their process and you stop interfering, because sometimes the sooner they crash, the sooner they'll turn their life around. And if you keep rescuing them, they never really get it. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why the caretaker can't do that, because the caretaker is trying to raise their self-esteem through believing that they're fixing everybody about them. So it's really not about the other person with the caretaker. It's really about them trying to make themselves feel valuable. And they think they're valuable by how many people they fix. You know? Yeah. So if you're a caretaker, what you're doing is you're ordering dysfunctional people to come into your life in order to raise your self-esteem. So if you're surrounded by people who seem to be really messed up, but they all need you, you might be a caretaker. So don't feel frustrated and don't feel angry about that. You're ordering them as much as you order something in a restaurant to build your own self-esteem. That's why they're there. Interesting. So he says the world of perception, on the other hand, is the world of what? Time, of change, of beginnings and endings. Okay, so the world of perception then is based on what? Time, change, beginnings, endings. Okay, so are we in a world of time, change, beginnings and endings? Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we're in the world of perception. Okay, then he goes on to say, well, it's based on what? Interpretation, not on facts. So we're in a world that's based on, like I saw on the news yesterday, this lady, I guess she was in some southern state, maybe it was the West Virginia thing where they were doing the Obama-Clinton thing. And she was saying, well, she wasn't going to vote for Obama because he was a Muslim. And they were saying, that's been cleared up a million times. He's not a Muslim. He's never been a Muslim. She said, I know that, but I believe he's a Muslim. So, you know, rather than just saying, I don't want to vote for him because he's black, she had to go Muslim. So that's okay. But I always think that's funny, too. It's like when I hear the whole thing about black, he's black and he'll be the first black president. And I like going, now, if I'm not mistaken, at the level of the world, doesn't he have a white mother?
He does.
Okay, why is it that white people want to disown the white part of him?
One drop rule, bro. Yes.
The one drop rule, which we know in the South. If you got one drop of black blood, you're black. Even I had my father was lighter than you all, but he was black because he had one drop of black blood. And that's the exact same thing that's being this with Obama. You know, it's like, yeah, he's not black, he's biracial. Actually, he represents an integration of the two. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But so rather than recognize that he's as white as he is black, he becomes black. That brings up that you can't have the black. And so I got to get rid of the black person. That's gonna, you know what I'm saying? It's all crazy. It's all just completely insane. But even if you want to come at the racial level, why not then just own the fact that he's black and white?
That's
never brought up. And I always say, and I feel like if it was brought up, he'd do better. Actually, because let's face it, people tend to go toward what they can identify with. That's human nature. People tend to go toward what is like themselves or what they can identify as being like themselves. And the fact is, he was raised by his white mother and his two white grandparents. You know, so that's why at the very beginning the issue was he black enough among blacks? That's what I was interested in. See, I watched the whole thing, like, you know, the racism thing, it's really funny to watch on both sides. You know, so it's crazy from both sides. You know, at first he wasn't black enough, now he's too black. Because if you're not going to deal with the content and the level of the ego, you always deal with the form. You always go, if you're unconscious, you always go for what does it look like. If you're conscious, you go for what's the content, what's the meaning, what's the purpose. And that's how you can tell a sleep person from an awake person. An awake person is looking for what are your thoughts, what are your feelings, what are your beliefs, what are you about, what are you doing. It's like, I'm not going to see you walk up to me and go, just because you're the white body, I don't like you. You're going to have to do something first. Then after we interact, I'll make that choice based on the kind of, you know, but I'm not going to just look at you, walk up and go, he's a white man. I ain't got no time for that. You know what I'm saying? If I had that attitude, I wouldn't have no class. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I've been living 23 years and 98% of the people that's always been drawn to my class has always been in white bodies. Even in the South. It was the strangest thing. And then I had a lot of people in white bodies say back to me, because they had a chance to work with me, it helped them change their mind about a lot of stuff that they had learned and had experienced. So I saw the Spirit was just setting it up, number one, to get to wake us up to another level, and to show me that those interpretations, those perceptions that I learned as a child have no basis in reality. But if I had kept that prejudice, then I wouldn't be doing what I love to do every day. So that's a real demonstration of what it's saying right here. Perception is an interpretation. It's not a fact. It's like she's interpreting him as a Muslim, because that's what you do in the world of perception. You just walk around and you interpret everything, and then you think your interpretation is true. And so the Course says, well, how do I keep from fooling myself with my interpretations? That's a good question. How do I keep from fooling myself with my interpretations? And it teaches the way you keep from fooling yourself with your interpretations is very simple. Again, if you're not feeling peace, you are wrong. What? If you're not feeling peace, your interpretation is wrong. Okay, what are you saying? Are you saying that if I'm not feeling peace about all those people in that earthquake in China that appeared to have died, then I'm wrong? If I was actually seeing that correctly, I would have peace about that? You would have compassion, but you would also have peace. And then I go, whoa, now, how am I going to possibly have peace about that? Right, because you're interpreting it incorrectly. First of all, you're interpreting that those people were bodies that could die. And because you think they're dead, you're upset. You also think those souls had no choice about that. So you're seeing them as victims of the earthquake. You don't realize that they're unlimited spiritual beings for the evolution of their soul, for whatever reason, chose to go through this experience in order to move to their next level of consciousness. Because you'd have to be on another level of consciousness to even see it that way.
Did you catch Oprah yesterday?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
It was about past life stuff.
Oh, was it? Yeah,
that was right here.
Yeah, you can't solve a problem. Like the Course said, you can't solve a problem from the same state of mind that you're creating it in. And that's why things don't change in the world. I can't solve a separation. I can't solve a racial problem from believing I'm my race.
Right.
I solve a racial problem from knowing that I'm not my race. Then I can start to relate to you at another level, and you can relate to me at another level, and then the difference in our races can be entertaining. We can learn a lot about our cultural background. We can learn a lot from each other, and it's fun. Do you know what I mean? But both of us would have to be outside of that concept of ourselves to be able to let ourselves enjoy that. Until a man realizes he's more than a man and a woman realizes she's more than a woman, then there's going to always be problems with men and women understanding each other. That's why you get the whole women are from Venus, men are from Mars thing. Yeah, that's true from a lower level of consciousness. From a higher level of consciousness, they're both spiritual beings creating their reality that's here to evolve in terms of recognition and love and unity, whether you're in a male body, female body, black body, white body. So if me and you were in a relationship and we saw each other as spiritual beings first, having a human experience, learning to evolve, we wouldn't have the problem that men and women go through. But if I'm a man and I think I'm just a man and you a woman and you think you're just a woman trying to make sure that the man don't take advantage of you and the man trying to make sure the woman don't, then we need to read the book Women Are From Venus and Men Are From Mars. Those books are very appropriate for people on that level of consciousness. People who are not on that level of consciousness, all of that's poppycock and folly. It doesn't even make any sense. Because you're on another level, so you're looking at it differently. So you have a whole new perception of it. So as you raise your level of consciousness, things really do get easier. They really do. Things do start to just flow that you used to fight to get to happen. It starts to change. So at some point on the spiritual path, just like you let go of toys, you let go of your concept of yourself too, in just the same way. And all of a sudden you go, I'm a spiritual being, I'm beyond male and female. Sometimes I have to remember what it means to identify with being a man so that I can communicate with men and women. Because after 30 years of dealing with this stuff, that is not my core belief about myself anymore. But I have to communicate with parts of myself that think it is. And I'm not going to walk up to them and say, well, I'm not a body. You know, what I'm going to do is walk up and go, how can we join? How can we have peace? And so I'm looking for the peace, not to try to impress you with my level of consciousness. You see what I mean? So one of the ways you can tell your ego has got control of you is that you will say truth statements and you'll say it to people and in situations that you know you're going to attract ridicule and attack for saying it. You'll just say something like that. You'll go, you walk up to a person who totally believes that they're a body and you'll say, those people, at some level, their soul chose that. Which is just going to make them mad. But that was what your ego wanted. Your ego wanted you to look like you were crazy and have people feel separate from you, because that's what it does. It's about fear. It's about separation. So as you wake up, you actually become more silent. As you wake up, you actually blend in more. You don't stand out more. You actually want to become invisible. You want to become unnoticed, because those who are like you, they're going to recognize you and they'll invite you into their experience, and you'll be surrounded by somebody you can talk all your weird stuff all you want. And they'll go, yeah, I know what you mean. Because you recognize each other. So to the people who think the way you used to think, you act just like, you look just like you always did to them. They relate to you the same way they always have. You become peaceful and loving toward them. So they enjoy having you around, even if sometimes you seem a little strange. But still, there's something about you they really like. You see what I mean? Uh-huh. And then spirit will never let you be alone in your consciousness, because your consciousness creates your reality. So you'll draw people to you naturally that you can talk your stuff to. You know, I've never had a lack of people I could talk metaphysical principles to ever. And I got into this stuff when I was 23. So even then, I was finding other people in their 20s that I could talk all this stuff I'm talking to you. They found me. I could, you know what I'm saying? If you're really about something, the people are going to come to you. If you think you're really about something, but you can never attract anybody else that's about it, I would invite you to consider how sincere you are about your path. Because there's no way you can really be about it and be alone. If you're one of these people, you feel like, oh, I'm really different and I'm studying this stuff and there's nobody I can talk to and I never attract anybody and I'm always alone, you're not really about it. You're thinking about being about it, but you're not being it yet. If you're being it, you attract people like you. You don't have to do anything. And you can be in the elevator and somebody do. I mean, it happened to me in the elevator. Guy got in, looked just like a Hell's Angels guy. The big leather jacket, the beard, the whole nine yards. And he looked up at me and he said, I don't know why it is that everybody just can't recognize. We all just one, and so we can all get along and just have that love. And I'm saying, yeah, man, you're right. And we had the best conversation. And then he said, see, we got off the elevator, went two different ways.
That's what bikers want. They want to be one, and that's why they join gangs.
You know, all of us want to. That's why all of us get into these different groups and stuff that we think we identify with. Mm-hmm. Because we all have this desire to connect and join. But what we do is we condemn each other's ways of reaching the oneness. So my way of reaching the oneness is the right way. Your way. You messed up. You know what I'm saying? That's how we make the error. The Course says we all want the same thing. We all want to be happy. We all want peace. Where we differ is on the means to achieve it. And then that's where we become enemies. So you want to focus on all of us sharing the same purpose. He says if we share the same purpose, the means will work itself out. But he says that the way we keep ourselves asleep the most in the Course, he says the one thing we use to keep ourselves asleep the most, or the way that we keep ourselves awake the most, is in our special relationships. Period. That's how we do it. Either you're in a relationship that's making you think you're separate in a body, and that's all you are, rather than that you have a body, which is cool. Or you're in a relationship that's making you realize you're more than that. And that you're innocent and that you're loved. And this can be friendship. I'm not just talking about romantic stuff. But you think about it, because your world, that is your special relationships. You don't know everybody. Think about it. We don't know everybody. When most people say that they're unhappy, it's usually three or four things at the max that's making them unhappy. Or at the max, three or four people. And they'll say their whole world sucks. Right. But when you go a little bit deeper, it's always one or two or three things. So actually, it's not a lot of things making us unhappy. It's just a few special relationships, whether it be our special relationship with our finances, our special relationship with our body, our special relationship with our job, our special relationship, that's what we use, or with ourselves. That's when you go, and just check it out, talk to your friends, and you'll see that they'll say their life isn't working, and they're really talking about one or two or three things that's going on. So that means out of billions of people, you're down to less than 10. You ought to be proud of yourself. Think about that. Out of all the people and all the things going on, you got less than 10 things that you're using to keep you sad. That's a high involvement. You down to 3 relationships that suck. You're doing good. Because you talk to some of your friends and people at work, they'll name you a list. They'll go, this and this is not working, and that's 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 not working. And they'll tell you everything that needs to change except themselves. Just listen. They'll tell you the boss needs to change, the job needs to change, the country needs to change, the president needs to change. They'll tell you everything that needs to change but their own mind. It's in this book, and everything I'm saying is in this material. And it's just amazing to me how it pegs us so beautifully. So the Course says, we're in a world based on interpretation, not facts. Because it does mean we would have a very cruel creator that would bury 900 school children under rubble. I couldn't blame somebody for saying they don't believe in God if they saw something like that happening. That doesn't sound illogical to me. Does it to you? It doesn't sound illogical to me that somebody could feel like if there is a God, that God must be cruel to let something like that happen. So Course runs it down and says, well, you got to make a choice. either you're wrong or God is cruel. So which one are you going to go? Are you going to go that maybe your creator actually isn't cruel, but you don't know what all of this means? You don't really know the big picture. You don't really know what's going on. I think that might be the case. That I don't really know what's going on. I don't really know what that means. I don't really know what that's all about. Yeah.
But if you believe in everlasting life and if you believe in the hereafter being better than it is here, then why would you think that?
Why would you think what?
That it was such a disaster.
Well, that exactly. That's my point. That the person that believes that it's a disaster is the person that doesn't believe what you just said. Mm-hmm. You know? Well, that's what I'm saying. There's me saying I believe in the higher power. There's me saying I believe that I'm eternal. There's me saying that I believe there's another level. And then there's what I actually believe.
Right.
Okay, so how I react to the physical things that happen in my life, that gets me in touch with what I really believe.
Right.
And that's what people can't get away from. I can talk all this good love stuff all day long. But if I'm stalking you because you're out of my sight, then I really don't believe any of this stuff that I'm talking about. And that's the thing that's such a trip, is that you get to a point that you really want to find out what you really believe as opposed to what you want to believe. And that's what happens when you get into truth. All of a sudden you say these things, and then all of a sudden you're in a situation that sees it shows you whether or not you really believe. Like my mother and I were extremely close. It wasn't until she made her transition that I really knew how I emotionally had been changed by studying the truth. Until then, I could have said all day long that I believe that she lived beyond her body or all of that stuff. But I could tell by my reaction that something had changed in me because I wasn't responding with the level of loss that I thought I would because I still felt her presence. And I really believed she lived on. So I realized that I believed more in the afterlife than I thought I did, which is different from saying it. Or, I believe God takes care of me. I just got laid off. I'm about to commit suicide because I'm so afraid about how my bills are going to be paid. Okay, well, you don't really believe you're sustained by the love of God. You were just saying that because you had a job. You know? So that's what I'm saying. It's like when you really get sincere about the spiritual path, you realize that the only thing that your life is presenting you with all the time are your real beliefs. So that you'll get a chance to know where you really are so you'll know where to start. And that's good. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. But I guarantee you, whenever you make those statements, like, I know I love everybody. Okay, you're going to get a chance to say, oh, you do. Well, let's see. Here comes your next mate. And let's see if you love everybody. Yeah. No, yes, I don't. You know, or yes, I really do. You know, it really sometimes you're pleasantly surprised. And you find out you're much stronger than you think you are. You've learned more than you think you have. And you really feel good about yourself because you really realize you're getting it. So I'm not saying this from a negative perspective. You all could be far beyond where you think you are and don't even know it. I think you are far beyond where you think you are. You wouldn't even be sitting up listening to something like this. Like Eckhart said, either you're ready for it or you're not. It's not about getting anybody ready. Either you can pick this book up and you'll go, that makes some sense to me at some level. Or you go, that's the stupidest airy-fairy crazy crap I ever. And so if somebody says that to you, then don't try to change their mind. Because they're not going to get it. You could talk to them all day, all night, all week. They're not going
to
get it.
It's going to take a couple more lives to...
That's right. Or some situation that is so intense that they have to transcend their level of consciousness. Some people go through stuff that's so intense that it just makes them have to change their mind because of the sheer intensity of it. What I'm trying to do in my life is just voluntarily change my mind so that I don't need something physical to make me do it. That's why I do this. I got to learn it. So why don't I just go ahead and go, okay, I'm willing. I don't need all the drama. I don't need all the drama. It's like, that's why I try to free the people in my life right now. I don't need to be forced to give you the freedom that's yours. It's like, I'm going to give you the freedom that's yours. It's yours anyway. It's only my own interpretation that makes me think I got any control over you, the world of perception. I think I have. I've interpreted that I control you. And then if you want to control me, you're going to let it look like I do. And that's the game. I pretend you control me if you pretend I control you. Okay? And then the minute that you don't let me pretend I control you good enough, I'm going to show you that I'm pretending you control me. And then you're devastated because now I'm not doing what you want me to do anymore. And you're mad. But see, you never had the power in the first place. I was just acting like you did because I was pretty happy with our arrangement. Now I'm not. I'm leaving. That's the way it works. Y'all know that's the way it works. So the Course says, why don't you, we are supposed to get into something that's so real that you can't lose it no matter what. That you know it's unconditional. That there's nothing you can do to lose eternal love. That's what I want. Oh, I'm so tired of this our fake love. Huh. And I've been so good at giving it. Haven't you? Haven't you?
Yes.
Don't leave me out here by myself now. Y'all know y'all been giving some fake love in the past too now. Come on. Might be a little fake stuff going on right now we might not even want to admit to. You know. I love you to a point. After that, I'm done. So the first two chapters.
Can I just ask with that?
Yeah, sure.
So with love then, mm-hmm. love would be different degrees of it.
No.
Where it's like,
no.
So when you're first with somebody, you're so madly in love with them and all that, and mm-hmm. then it changes where it seems like it's like you're less, I guess it would be needy and mm-hmm. so wrapped up mm-hmm. in them, where it sort of levels off. And then I wondered, am I less in love with some of these people in my life, or is it just that it's actually all seems more the same?
I think it's both. I think you are less in love with them.
Which is good.
Which is a good thing. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you're less in love. Because to make that make sense, the Course would suggest that you just change the word love to specialness. Say, all you have to do is just change the word love to specialness, and all of a sudden it all makes sense.
So you're less in specialness.
Right.
It just feels like
that. Right. All of a sudden, that's right. All of a sudden, you're not so much in just the focus of the specialness on that person. And maybe because you're feeling safe enough, or the relationship is actually moving toward letting love come through enough that you don't have to have that fear of loss that makes you have to make sure every second that you're trying to make this energy happen however you want it to happen. You see what I mean? So what people call losing the romance in most cases is just you becoming more sane and about the relationship. Because the Course says in the beginning, what we call the in love part is that I see the next person that I think is going to restore my wounded self-esteem. You're the person that's going to make up for what everybody didn't give me and all the other relationships that I never had before you. So I'm excited. That's the way the Course describes, which doesn't sound very romantic, but that's, he says, that's what's happened. And so what happens is that once you get in the relationship, then reality starts to dawn and you realize they're not going to complete you because nobody can. Mm-hmm. Then the specialness starts to drop off and you're not quite as excited about my phone call as you used to be because I'm not going to be able to fulfill that fantasy that you thought that I was going to be able to fulfill for you. And then we call it sometimes the passion dropping off. But I've noticed that the passion tends not to drop off in a relationship where both people are using the relationship in order for them to complete themselves and not use the other person to do it. But the other person is just providing a safe shelter for you to grow in, and you're doing the same thing. Then you get more and more turned on by each other. So the passion never has to leave if the purpose of the relationship is correct. But the passion is going to leave if you're looking for the other person to complete you, because that's not going to happen. So you're going to get disappointed, and then you don't want to invest in something that you feel like is not going to give you what you want. So that's chapters 15, 16, and 17. Those are three chapters that run most people away from the Course in Miracles forever. Okay, because those are the chapters that deal with special love. And most people can't handle what the Course teaches about special love. It just wrecks their whole perception of what it is. Because they have to get so honest with themselves about why they're in a relationship. And let's face it, in most cases, it is about being special. It's about somebody making me feel like I'm the most important thing out there. Because I don't feel like I am. So I need you to help me feel like I am. And it happens in friendships as well as in romantic relationships. I've seen just as much of it. You are my best friend, and you seem like you're getting close to that other person, and you've been going out to the movie with them when you used to go out to the movie with me. I mean, it goes through everything. It's not just romantic, but that never comes up with a person who knows the truth. You know why? Because they believe that everybody who's in their present moment are the people that's supposed to be there. So they don't think about the people that's not there, because there's nothing missing in the moment that they're having. And so you don't get into, you didn't call me for the last 6 months, because you didn't experience any lack of love during that 6 month period. And you also believe it's in divine order. So therefore you all talk when you're supposed to talk, and you see each other when you're supposed to see each other. So if you're dealing with somebody from that perspective, then they're not condemning you because they didn't talk to you or whatever. See, it's a different, somebody coming from the truth is much easier to deal with than someone that's coming from the illusion. And so it's not hard to have a lot of relationships if none of them are making demands on you. The reason why people don't like to have a lot of relationships is because they know if I have a lot of special relationships, then there's a lot of people making special demands on me, and they're going to be upset with me because I'm not able to meet all those special needs. So maybe if I have one friend, maybe two, I got time enough for that. You know, but they'll say I'm overextended. That's the term. It's like right now I can't spend much time with you because I'm overextended. But if you were talking to a conscious person, they would go, okay, then it means right now for whatever reason you and I are not supposed to be spending a lot of time together, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. See how you said that? See, there's no guilt in that. Mm-hmm. But rather than, well, I don't know why you don't see me as valuable as you just don't. Okay. See, so then you just have one or two relationships. But then we're moving on a path that's about us expanding love and extending love. So how can you do that without complicating your life unless you're doing that in a way that has nothing to do with bodies? Because you don't have time to be with everybody. You see what I mean? So the next level must be some level that has nothing to do with time, like he says here. But time, change, beginnings, and end. It must be that I must love you on some level that I feel your love, whether you're in front of me or whether you're across the world. Mm-hmm. It must have nothing to do with our bodies being together.
Oh, I really come to see that.
Being in contact.
Or being in physical contact. Yeah. To me, that's the only way it could possibly work. But most of us are not on the level that we can do that yet. So it seems kind of like how can that happen? But that's okay. There are a lot of levels we experience it now that one time we wouldn't have thought we could experience it. You know what I mean? So I feel like the whole dynamic must shift to be something different from the way we do it.
Sort of like the technology with the emails and the cell phones. And, you know, you are in contact, but not really there.
Well, that's what set all of that symbolic up. I'm glad you mentioned that. All of that is symbolic of the fact that we go into another level of consciousness,
right,
where we're able to be in constant communication with each other, whether our bodies are around each other or not. It's a reflection of telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reflection of us getting to a level of consciousness where we won't have to be in each other's physical presence to communicate with each other. That's what's happening. We are in the middle of a major, major metamorphosis that's going on right now. So I'm going to stop because it's time to stop. That's a good reason, isn't it? What do you think? I'm doing an advanced mind training on the 31st, the last Saturday.